Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Too often in the news, we hear all the bad news, and we don't hear the many good things that people in our community are doing to help people here and around the world. And today, I'm very pleased that my guest is Gary Beck, who is the founder of Rescue Task Force, a nonprofit that for many years was headquartered right here at El Cajon in East County. Gary, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Miriam. Great to be home. But I want to thank you for the great work that you do, the community service that you
do.
Even though I live out of the area right now, I like to see the alerts for curiosity, but I know that people are depending on them. But thank you for the work that you do. I know at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, point, there's messages popping in on SIG alerts and whatnot. So.
Well, you're welcome. For those who may not be familiar with them, East County Magazines, we operate the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts, and people can sign up for those at eastcountymagazine.org. Gary is the founder, as we mentioned, with Rescue Task Force. Gary, how long ago did this get started?
We started formally 25 years ago. I had been in the fire department. I was a battalion commander. I started doing some volunteer work in Central America and then subsequently in Afghanistan, and wound up leaving the fire department early.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I'd have stayed and retired where I look at what these pensions are drawn now.
Well, you have truly dedicated your life to helping people. You've been in just about every major natural disaster that I can think of in recent years, and I understand that you even met your wife while doing some rescue work. Tell us about that.
We were in Thailand at the tsunami, and my wife, to-be wife, one of our local volunteers, we met, and subsequently got married, came back here to the States, and Jay LeSueur was assemblyman at the time,
right?
Was a good friend. We arrived here, I think it was on a Thursday, I can't remember which day it was, 16th of September, and then on the 18th, we had our wedding in Jay's yard. Wendell was my best man, and mm-hmm. We'll talk about Wendell, my former partner.
Wendell Cutting used to work for Duncan Hunter.
Yeah, he was chief of staff and just my brother. And he was best man. We got married arrived on the 18th, got married on the 22nd, and then left on the 23rd, spent our honeymoon in Katrina.
Oh, my goodness, and cleaning up after Hurricane Katrina, or rescuing people in Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, working off of airboats. Roads were out, bridges were out,
wow.
And we had through a mutual friend, met a guy that had an airboat business. Of course, there was no airboat tourism there, so he volunteered up his whole fleet of airboats for disaster relief work.
So you were going through places like, the Ninth Ward, where the houses were almost underwater?
We didn't work right in New Orleans. There was a lot of help there, and typically, Miriam, what Rescue Task Force does is we'll go to the outlying areas.
So the outer islands down in the Gulf?
Yeah, a lot of disaster relief tends to focus on the bigger metropolitan areas where the cameras are.
Right.
And there's magnets in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we go out to the outlying areas. This was out in the bayous and that, getting people in. We wound up doing a lot of pet rescue. Families had been evacuated. They couldn't get their dog at the time. We could go back in. They couldn't. So we did a lot of work with reuniting dogs with the families.
Mm-hmm.
And
very
couple of cats,
work.
Mostly dog. But just taking relief supplies, finding out where people were so that the guardsmen would know where to go get people into. So it was a typical operation, usually on a disaster like that. The U.S. is a little bit different because we have infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
like El Salvador earthquake, tsunami, the Philippines disaster. What we do is we'll go in, we'll respond immediately with a team.
So you actually pull people out of the rubble or dangerous situations at times?
We have. We typically do not because there's professionals there to do that. Our volunteers aren't trained to that level. We have medical and doctors and dentists that are going. they'll take mm-hmm. them after the locals. We worked with some great teams out of Taiwan to do that.
Well, you're sending medical people down right now into the Mosquito Coast and some other places, I understand.
We have teams working even just today in El Salvador mm-hmm. with our dental teams. We're getting ready to return to the Mosquito Coast of Honduras in January. But we've got two great teams in the Philippines horrible disaster. One team is, and we say international disaster relief, that's literal. One of our teams is a team of doctors out of Thailand.
Wow.
Friends of ours that are responding, and we're underwriting their project. And then another team of doctors from the Inland Empire, Southern California, going over. But typically, when a disaster, we'll go in right away on day one. As soon as we get on a plane, we might have to land in the country next door and use mules or burros or whatever to get into the area. But we'll take money and then buy wherever, how far back from the disaster is, stores are intact, buy a water, toothbrushes, hygiene items, sheeting for plastic, take that in. While the containers that we have, when I say containers, think of a semi-truck, it's mm-hmm. the overseas shipping containers.
Big containers.
While that stuff is getting on the water and coming in, usually it's a couple weeks before they hit. So what we do is just take a lot of money, do immediate disaster relief. And that can be bandaging wounds, burn packs, and a lot of burns. People are evacuated from mm-hmm. their homes, making campfires. The kids are playing around. That's the main thing we see in the first couple of days. After that, like now in the Philippines, is the dysentery because of the bad water and whatnot. So,
one of the more unusual projects that you're involved in is literacy schools for girls in Afghanistan. In that country, of course, it's actually prohibited for women to have an education. How did you get involved in this amazing project?
That was the fruit of our work back during the Soviet occupation. Back mm-hmm. in 87, 88, I was working in Afghanistan. We're taking in medical teams in. Mm-hmm. And that was back before Mujahideen was a bad word. Mm-hmm. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, I guess. But we made some very good, close, personal relationships with the Hazara people. Hazara is the Mongol people. They're descendants of Genghis Khan.
My goodness. Genghis Khan. So these are not the Taliban, the people that we've been fighting. Like, these are allies of the United States.
They're very pro-West. It is not the loonies that you see on the television, the fundamentalists. Well, evidenced by what happened after the Taliban fell, their leadership came to us and asked us if we would help with a project that they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I was all interested. They said, we would like to start literacy for our women. And it just didn't compute, Miriam. I just thought, you know, this never in history, and this was back 15 mm-hmm. years or so ago, it was just absolutely prohibited. But the leadership
amazing.
Wanted, the leader told us, he said, I can't remember the exact quote, but he said that the one that cannot read is like the blind, mm-hmm. and we want our women to be healthy.
Wow, so very forward-thinking, very Western-thinking.
Very forward, very Western-thinking. You don't see them, they take off their, they wear a little modestly veil out on the street, but none of that burqa, the cover thing.
Right.
But they'll lift their veil and say, oh, take my picture, I want the people in America to see me.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're on our website.
It must make such a big difference. Tell us what a difference the education can make in the lives of these girls and women that you teach.
Well, so it started off with one little project just out of pocket. Mm-hmm. Now we have 23 literacy centers, and they're not schools. We're not teaching the whole curriculum. It's just basic literacy.
Mm-hmm. How to read and write.
And in one of them, we've got three generations, a grandma, her mm-hmm. daughter, and the granddaughter.
My goodness.
For the first time ever, learning to read and write. And I'll tell you, one little side note is some things are gender specific. Mm-hmm. Aside from all the esoterics about literacy and being able to read and write and all the things that it could lead to, you know what the main note that we get from the ladies is that they appreciate the older ladies?
No, what is it?
Recipes.
Recipes, cooking.
I like that I can send recipe. they can communicate with the other ladies in their family in other villages.
How wonderful.
Which they've never been able to do. So.
Yeah. And yet this is very, very dangerous, not only for the women, but for your teachers that go over there. And in some parts of the country, there's actually been mass poisonings by the Taliban. Thankfully, not at any of your schools. Acid attacks on some of these girls and women.
It haunts me every day the courage of our teachers, because most of our teachers are young girls, ones that know how to read and write. Mm-hmm. Our coordinators there, one is a Christian. And,
which makes it extremely dangerous.
Extremely dangerous. So they've got a big bullseye all over them. We're very concerned about what's going to happen with the drawdown now. If Karzai is
with the American troops pulling out. Is that, out, so that puts these girls and these women at risk?
A terrible risk. Right now, they're pretty well geographically protected, but as the Taliban resurges, then they will be very much at risk.
Well,
and I don't mean risk they could be harassed. I mean get their heads cut off.
Wow. Well, we are certainly all going to be hoping for the best for them, Gary.
Yeah. Let me just mention, though, now with when we started the schools, there was no education. Today, for education in Afghanistan, the women, by law, have to be able to go to school. They cannot be excluded, but they're excluded because they cannot read and write at their age level.
I see.
You can't have a 16-year-old girl going into third grade.
So the younger ones are getting an education now.
Yeah.
But
the older ones... So what these centers are doing is teaching them literacy at their age level.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a 15, 16-year-old can go
marvelous
to education. And over the course of the project, we've had 7,000 graduates.
Wow, that's huge.
That means 7,000 ladies that for the first time ever can read and write. And of those 7,000, 2,000 have gone on to higher education, been able to go to Kabul,
to college,
Kunduhar, to the higher education schools.
Good for them.
Three of them are nurses today, and two of them are teachers.
Wow.
Aside from just the other occupations that they've gone into.
Very heartwarming.
It's a life change. It's a society changing. And this is our Rescue Task Force has a lot of great projects, but this is one that truly is of eternal value.
Absolutely. Now, you also more recently have become involved in helping to combat human trafficking of girls and women. Tell us about that.
Our project in Cambodia is, as the one in Afghanistan, is, you know, we're blessed with so many wonderful sponsors and and donors. But SOCAL, which is based right here in San Diego County, East County, Petroleum, SOCAL, S-O-C-O, Petroleum. Mm-hmm. You see their trucks around. They do commercial,
right?
Like to the fleet and
so they're your sponsor industry for the human trafficking.
Yes,
project. Very good.
And which is of no benefit to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like they can put their signs up on the side of these
schools
over in Cambodia.
That's interesting. How
they're
they
just
chose
the
cause.
A wonderful company and a wonderful family. The benevolence is just amazing.
Nice.
So we've been able to expand the literacy project in Afghanistan to Cambodia to help with trafficking victims. What we're doing there is taking the younger girls between 19 and 12.
12. Children as young as 12 years old being trafficked. And when we say trafficked, we're talking sold into prostitution, slavery.
Wow. They go a lot younger, but the population that we're working with is 12 to 19. Mm. They have some English skills.
Yeah.
You know, hello, how are you?
So what do you do for them?
We're taking through a great group of our volunteers from University of California, Long Beach, academians that have developed curriculum in the Khmer language for teaching ESL, as English as a second language. We have teachers going over in January starting a 15-week crash course for 30 of these girls. It's
beautiful.
A test group to get their English skills up to where they can use the tablets that we're providing them.
Ah, high tech.
Once they get their English to where they can use that tablet, the world is open.
Right.
Khan University, iUniversity, so much stuff is available.
So they can help to lift
the East County Magazine, and so many things available
they can read
to
our
them
interview.
Is available to them that their education, so that they'll
wonderful
be able to get meaningful work. And any work is good if they can get a job as a waitress. But we want these girls to be able to do more and say, you know, would you like coffee?
Right.
There's no reason why they cannot be working in call centers, in nursing, the travel industry, hotels. Cambodia is developing after the years of horror, the Khmer Rouge.
Now, speaking of the Khmer Rouge, one of the most amazing projects to me that you're working on is continuing in the efforts of Princess Diana. Many remember the work that she did to help children who were victims of landmines from the Khmer Rouge regime. And you're helping some of these people that were victims of these mines. Tell us what you're doing.
We've been working for many years in Cambodia, and then we started working about 5 years ago with Free Wheelchair Mission, a ministry group out of Costa Mesa, providing wheelchairs. Even today, this long after the mid-70s of the Khmer Rouge, there's the World Health Organization, WHO, reports 400 average new mine victims a year.
My goodness.
In Cambodia. It's been,
and we're talking children so often who've had their legs blown off.
Feet blown off. They're low velocity explosions. It blows.
And they don't have prosthetic limbs often. So these are people who were crawling on the ground.
Farmers that, you know, had been working. And so the wheelchair just provide a great mobility. It also provides mobility to the family, because a lot of times when you have a handicapped elder, then one of the kids has got to be tending to them.
Right.
So that means the kid's not going to school.
And this is an example of where your organization, because of the great esteem in which you're held, you're able to get supplies, like these wheelchairs donated and things, and then even small amounts of money, you do miracles with. Tell us a little bit about what does it take
wheelchairs. Let me go one other thing on the importance of the wheelchairs there. Mm-hmm. Also, during the Khmer Rouge, all Western medicine was banned. Mm. So that means, in spite of the marvelous work that Rotary is doing, polio is on the increase in Cambodia.
One of the only places in the world that it's left.
Yeah, but it's because of that absence of time. So there's the need for wheelchairs there. So wheelchairs is an example. Just today I got an offer of $5 million worth of amoxicillin, antibiotics for Cambodia, that we leverage that.
$5 million worth of pharmaceuticals.
It's $5 million. We'll be able to ship that for about $9,000 with freight and fees.
My goodness.
So I don't know
how
your other investments are doing, but that's a pretty good return on investment.
These wheelchairs, too, I understand. It's only something like $20 once you get the wheelchair itself donated.
To our cost.
For $20, you can get a wheelchair delivered and into the hands of someone who has no legs.
That's our rescue task force cost.
Wow.
It's amazing. So
amazing.
All of our projects are great. You know, we try to be good stewards of the donor's money. We have right now going towards to the Philippines a whole container of bicycles that was donated before the typhoon. So we rerouted it to the Philippines there because, again, it was going to be Christmas toys for kids, but now there's folks that need it
right now,
basic transportation.
To live, yeah.
So and plus the cleaning supplies, pharmaceuticals that were going. So, again, it's great leveraging.
Right. Now, in your semi-retirement, I understand you're now headquartered up in the San Bernardino area, but you still have an awful lot of supporters and fans right here in East County, don't you?
I imagine 90% of our donor base is right here in East County, and probably another 5% on top of that is San Diego in general. And truly, you know, East County is hard as big as East County. The folks have just been so generous and so supportive in so many ways over the years. So I moved back up to San Bernardino when I retired just because of my mom is there, family is there, and it's a lot less expensive, too.
Yeah.
I love San Diego, but... Yeah.
Well, our listeners have been very generous, too. I'll tell one little story here from East County Magazine. A couple of years ago, when they had the bad flooding, the flooding in Pakistan, it was so bad, and you called me and told me you had photos that your team was sending you on the ground from this area in Afghanistan where your schools are, and where everything had washed away. You were so worried that hundreds of people were going to starve to death, and could we help? And we put the story up, and I believe you told me within a couple of days you had $10,000 worth of donations.
Money that came in, and that was direct aid money that we could transfer over to our
guys. Huge amounts of rice. I mean, that could keep a lot of people
purchased.
Alive.
That money was all spent locally in country there. So, but people do respond, and we've got great support base here, and we appreciate it. We appreciate you for being part of the Rescue Task Force team and helping to wave the flag.
Well, you're very welcome, Gary. Now, if listeners out there want to get more information or they want to help in any way, how can they get in touch with you, and where can they find that information?
Yeah, our website, we have great videos on our water filter projects. We haven't even talked about that.
Oh,
in January when we go to Honduras, clean water.
Mm-hmm.
www.rescuetaskforce.org.
Mm-hmm. Rescuetaskforce.org. Okay.
My phone number is, I kept my 619 phone number. It's easy to remember. The area code is 619-456-1896.
So
we got a Facebook page, Rescue Task Force. Mm-hmm. But mostly on our website, we invite people to sign up for our email.
That is a marvelous newsletter, folks, if you want to be inspired and just really feel good about the work that this organization is doing and what a difference they have. You know, quotes from some of the people that they've helped directly that really are very, very heartwarming.
Thank you. So, yeah, we have our hard paper newsletter. It's our monthly newsletter gets out about every 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
But in the interim of that, we do email letters like the Philippines when there's, and how, if there's specific needs, maybe if we even need some volunteers for a given project
or something.
And people can sign up for that. We only send out something when it's worth sending out.
Yeah. I mean, and this is very timely. If an earthquake were to hit somewhere in the world today, by tomorrow, you'd probably have an email from Gary telling
you
what's needed and if they're sending a team and how you can help.
So we invite people. You can go on the website. There's a button there that'll sign up for that. So,
and that's free.
And we preach people's prayers. That's the main thing, is the prayer support and this, the support of the community at large.
Well, Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. And we look forward to hearing more in the future about the good work that Rescue Task Force is doing around the world.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you. I hope on my drive back to Inland Empire tonight I don't get a sig alert from you.
Let's hope not.
But I know if there is one, you'll have it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
This is Ed Brenner with East County Magazine and KNSJ 89.1. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, or it will starting midweek in East County. Cold weather is forecast to sweep into our region on Tuesday, bringing rain countywide and snow down to elevations as low as 3,500 feet by Wednesday. Areas at or above 3,500 feet include Julian, Cuyamaca, Pine Valley, Descanso, Boulevard, Mount Laguna, and Warner Springs. Westerly winds in mountain and desert areas are also forecast. Expect cooler temperatures to continue through at least Friday, the National Weather Service predicts, meaning snow may stay on the ground long enough to round up the family and head for the mountains this weekend to enjoy some playtime in the snow.
This is Leon Thompson.
And this is Miriam Raftery with this week's local government report. San Diego supervisors meet on Tuesday and Wednesday, December 3rd and 4th at 9 a.m. The hottest item this week is a public hearing Tuesday on the county's proposal to assess fees to recover the actual cost of services provided by the San Diego County Fire Authority, including fire plan reviews, inspections, and other technical work. In the past, these services have been provided to individuals and businesses without full cost recovery. The agenda does not list just how much the proposed fees would be or how much revenue the county expects to raise, but coming on the heels of a statewide fire fee that is going up at year's end, the proposal is likely to fuel controversy among taxpayers. The item is first on Tuesday's agenda.
Lakeside's community planning group's meeting is on Wednesday, December 4th at 6:30 p.m. A public hearing will be held on proposed 35-foot-tall cell phone tower at the Lakeside Fire Station No. 3 on Highway 8 Business Loop. Also on the agenda is a proposed subdivision with 18 residential lots on Lake Jennings Park Road. In addition, the Department of Parks and Recreation seeks public input on its updated 5-year park project priority list.
The Boulevard Planning Group has several major items to consider at its meeting on Thursday, December 5th at 7 p.m. Planners will hold a question and answer session on a new Boulevard fire station and consider whether a moratorium should be requested for new large-scale commercial projects until the Boulevard fire stations are verifiably staffed daily around the clock. The agenda also includes major energy issues, such as Soitec solar projects, for which a comment period will start on December 12th. Other energy projects to be discussed include Infigen's proposed Fox Acres Solar, Champan Ranch Solar, and Iberdrola's Thule Wind planned in McCain Valley. There will be updates on lawsuits filed challenging the Iberdrola project, a CEQA suit filed over the county's new wind ordinance, and another lawsuit over Sempra's cross-border transmission line from Mexico. Water will be another hot topic. The Boulevard Planning Group will discuss a California Public Utilities Commission ruling that modified a court appointment of a receiver for the troubled Live Oak Springs Water District. In addition, there will be discussion of controversial groundwater sales by the Campo Tribe and Live Oak Springs Water to San Diego Gas and Electric for construction of two substations and power lines. Rough Acre Ranch's planned campground and conference center will also be on the agenda.
Lemon Grove City Council meets on Tuesday, December 3rd at 6 p.m. Council members in the cash-strapped community will hear a report on possible naming rights of city-owned property. Looking ahead to next week, El Cajon City Council will meet on December 10th at 3 p.m. The full agenda has not yet been published, but will include a review of applications for the city council vacancy and possible appointment of a new city council member.
The City of El Cajon is accepting applications to fill a vacancy on the El Cajon City Council. The deadline to apply is this Wednesday, December 4th at 5:30 p.m. Applications are available at the city's website. To be eligible, you must be a resident and a registered voter when you apply and throughout your term of office. The seat is open to fill the vacancy left when Councilman Bill Wells was appointed mayor after former Mayor Mark Lewis resigned. Council members must also fill out a statement of economic interest in accordance with the city's Conflict of Interest Code. Applications must be turned into the city clerk's office at City Hall, 200 Civic Center Way in El Cajon, by 5:30 on Wednesday, December 4th. The council appointee will serve until the term expires in November 2016. Interviews with applicants will be scheduled for Tuesday, December 10th, prior to the council meeting the same day. Applicants will receive a letter confirming the interview before that meeting. The application asks would-be council members to list their work experience, their vision for El Cajon, why they want to be a council member, any involvement with city boards, commissions, and committees, and involvement with any other organizations that benefit El Cajon residents or businesses. If you have questions about the application or interview process, call the city clerk's office at 619-441-1763. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. To help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon, and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Desert solar projects have been touted as environmentally friendly, but now, disturbing evidence has emerged that these projects are incinerating birds flying overhead. 2 months ago, 34 birds were found dead or injured at Ivanpah Solar, owned by Bright Source Energy in San Bernardino County. Almost half had burned feathers, and some had nothing left but spines where their feathers had melted from reflected beams of sunlight, according to a report in the Desert Sun newspaper. The toll was even worse in October when 32 dead birds were found at the site, 17 with scorched feathers. Ivanpah, the world's largest solar facility, isn't the only solar plant frying birds. Another 19 birds were found dead at another solar collecting project, Desert Sunlight, also in California. More are planned, including Palin's proposed project in the Coachella Valley that would be located near two wildlife refuges where migrating birds stop in the Pacific Flyway. Now, unlike projects that rely solely on solar panels, these facilities utilize towers that concentrate solar power using thousands of reflecting mirrors. The technology holds promise to produce an enormous amount of electricity, but apparently at a tragic cost to birds. The recent rash of bird deaths at Ivanpah included numerous yellow-rumped warblers, which is a species rarely seen in the region. A KCET-TV environmental journalist has raised a disturbing question. Could the mirrored surfaces, which resemble water from the air, actually be attracting birds? If so, the toll could climb much higher. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has reported that large numbers of insects were attracted to the solar flux, insects that warblers feed upon. Ivanpah has thus far only been online for testing. It is slated to go online full-time by year's end, which is likely to mean an even worse toll on California wildlife. The toll on birds, particularly species protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, is particularly troubling when combined with the fact that evidence has emerged that California's wind projects are the deadliest in the nation among states that provided data. Texas, which has the most wind turbines, notably did not. Moreover, the newest turbine designs, which are replacing older lattice styles, appear even worse, with bird mortalities higher the taller the turbines become. California's new wind turbines may be killing over 100,000 birds a year, according to a peer-reviewed study to be published in December by the Smithsonian Institute's Migratory Bird Center. And our state's wind turbines kill more wildlife per megawatt than identical turbines in other parts of the country. These findings together raise a disturbing question. Can energy projects that decimate wildlife really be considered green? Just in time for the holidays, El Cajon resident Jackie Bradfield and her 6-year-old stepdaughter Haley have new holiday decorations to replace ones that were stolen. The heartwarming donations came from a secret Santa with help from El Cajon residents Dina Weil and Shirley Johnson. Last week, just after putting up holiday decor, including an inflatable Santa, Bradfute heard a commotion. She came outside to find everything missing, like a scene straight out of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Johnson and Weil delivered new decorations last week, complete with a wreath, Santa, and an inflatable reindeer. The donations came after Bradfute posted about the theft on an online police message board. The anonymous donor who aided in the effort wanted Bradfute's daughter to know that there are good people in the world. Bradfute said she was moved nearly to tears as she looked upon the donated Christmas display. Haley saw the decorations on Thanksgiving Day, thanks to the kindness of community members. "It makes me feel really blessed," Bradfute said, adding, "It feels like the holidays again." Did you know that your kitchen fat, oil, and grease left over from daily cooking or deep frying a Thanksgiving turkey can be recycled and turned into biofuel? EDCO has a free, safe, and environmentally friendly program that turns fat into fuel. Residents are asked to simply collect used discarded fat, oil, and grease in a leak-proof container and drop it off free of charge at any of EDCO's buyback centers. It will then be processed, filtered, and converted into biodiesel by a third-party processor and used to power vehicles. Be sure not to mix your kitchen fat, oil, and grease with anything else, such as motor oil, that could prevent it from being converted to biodiesel. EDCO has buyback stations for recycling in East County, in La Mesa and Lemon Grove. The La Mesa facility is located at 8184 Commercial Street. Lemon Grove's is at 6700 Federal Boulevard, and both are open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. For information on these and other EDCO recycling centers countywide, visit www.edcodisposal.com.
This is Leon Thompson reporting on a pot drop busted near Brown Field in Otay. U.S. Border Patrol and custom agents have intercepted smugglers who dropped marijuana bales over San Diego from an ultralight aircraft on Monday. Authorities seized over 260 pounds of pot with a street value of $157,000. The aircraft was spotted at 4:15 a.m. flying over the border.
authorities dispatched a helicopter and guided Border Patrol agents on the ground to the remote drop location near Brownfield Airport. There they found 10 bundles of marijuana and a metal cage used to hold the cargo under the ultralight aircraft. Agents arrested two men, one an undocumented immigrant, the other a legal resident. They also seized a Ford Expedition at the scene. The ultralight aircraft did not land and was tracked returning to Mexico with its daring pilot. William Raymond, director of air operations at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Office of Air and Marine, said the operation is an example of how coordinated efforts utilizing technology are playing a key role in preventing illegal activity along our border. Customs and Border Protection asked for help from residents throughout the San Diego border region. Citizens can report suspicious air and marine activity and remain anonymous by calling 866-AIR-BUST. That's 866-AIR-BUST.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important health updates. There's been a lot of media coverage about issues with the affordable health care reform rollout known as Obamacare. A lot of the information has been confusing, and some of it doesn't even apply to people in California, which is one of the states that has opted to adopt health care exchange programs with options for California residents that people in many other states don't have. On the other hand, after President Obama said that people who like their existing policies can keep them at least for another year, California authorities announced that this will not be the case in California, where some existing policies will be canceled because they do not meet the requirements of the Federal Affordable Health Care Act. The director of Covered California, which is the name for California's Health Exchanges program, says this is because a delay would actually be harmful to many Californians. By moving into the exchange programs, many consumers will pay less, have better coverage, or both. Still, there are some higher-income consumers who will have to pay more, though they may get better coverage for their money. If you have not yet checked into your options, now is the time, since the plans will take effect in January. To answer questions from consumers who are transitioning from current market health insurance plans to coverage under the Affordable Care Act, Covered California has set up a telephone hotline that you can call to get information about the new law and the transitions, explore health plans and benefits, and find options for the most affordable care. The hotline is 855-857-0445. Again, 855-857-0445. It will operate Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and on Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can also get information on California's programs at www.coveredca.com or by calling 1-800-300-1506. Remember, Californians do not have to go through the federal website that has been plagued by delays due to heavy traffic, design issues, and hackers seeking to sabotage that site. You can go to www.coveredca.com instead. Covered California is receiving 10,000 applications a day, which is way up from when the program first opened. As of November 16th, over 300,000 applications had been received and 71,000 completely processed. California is hoping that the program will ultimately reduce medical costs and help many consumers, particularly the 5 million Californians who have no health insurance. Uninsured medical bills caused nearly a million Californians to spend all or most of their life savings, and 100,000 Californians declared bankruptcy due to medical bills and lack of insurance coverage. Now, if you own a business, you need to know that the federal government has announced it will delay for 1 year its website for businesses seeking federal health care coverage for employees. However, businesses can still get coverage through insurance brokers or companies. And in California, small businesses can get information through the Covered California website by clicking the Program and Partners tab at the top of the site and then choose the Small Business Health option. Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz. Today we have a special holiday edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz, and I want to welcome our guests today, Raina and Leona.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, Raina and Leona, are you ready for the first question?
Yes, we are.
Okay. A new East County holiday tradition is the Waddle and Trot, which is set for Thanksgiving.
What type of event is the Waddle and Trot?
Black Friday shopping?
It must be in your pants.
No, it's not either one of those things. Okay, let me give you some choices. Is it a turkey calling contest in Ramona, a 5K run for charity in Santee, a roundup at the Lakeside Rodeo of turkeys, or a mall walk for shoppers at Grossmont Center?
A turkey calling.
Nope.
A mall walk for shoppers.
That sounds like fun, but no. The right answer. Any more guesses? You're down to two. Is it the Lakeside Rodeo Roundup or the 5K run for charity?
5K run.
That's
Yay,
the right answer.
I got
answer.
It. Woohoo!
You got it. Okay, one for Raina. Next question. What do wild turkeys and wild pigs in East County have in common?
They get stuffed.
Well, actually, that maybe that's a good answer. That wasn't the one I was thinking of.
But. They get eaten, that's for sure.
Okay. You know, I'm going to give you guys both a point for that. You came up with answers I didn't even think of. But just for fun, we'll read the other choices. Is the answer neither one of them can fly, they're protected from hunting, they're not native to our region, or they are elusive and hard to see?
Pigs don't fly?
They're elusive and hard to see.
Well, the pigs are pretty elusive, but those turkeys are everywhere. You drive through Julian and they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah. They'll chase your car.
The answer is, actually, that neither one of them is native to our region.
I thought of that. What did I say?
Invasive species. Okay, next.
The turkeys come from Foster Farm.
They come from Safeway.
Okay, Leona, Raina. Lemon Grove celebrates the holiday season with an event featuring a giant one of these. What huge item is the centerpiece of their celebration?
Lemon?
Santa?
Nope, it's not a lemon and it's not Santa. Is it a snowman, a Christmas tree, a bonfire, or, well, lemon was one of the guesses, so you're down to three choices left now.
A bonfire.
That's right. It's a
really?
Bonfire, a giant,
wow.
huge bonfire.
Wow.
Yes, kind of like Burning Man in East County, you know? Okay, Alpine's Winter Festival brings something special in for the children. What is it?
I know this.
It's ice skating.
Nope.
Gifts.
No. Vieja says that's nope.
Gifts? Presents?
They may do that. I don't know. But the choices I had were toys from Santa's workshop, snow, reindeer, or penguins.
Reindeer.
Nope, not reindeer.
Penguins?
Leonie?
Snow.
At Christmas? Penguins?
No, it's snow. They actually
snow.
Make it snow and the kids can go sledding and
That's
everything.
That's wonderful.
Okay, forget Rockefeller Plaza. Where can you find an even larger outdoor ice rink? In fact, it's the largest one in Southern California.
As I said before, it's Viejas.
That's right. Viejas Outlet Mall in Alpine is the correct answer. Okay. El Cajon's Mother Goose Parade each year ends with the arrival of someone special. Who is it?
A goose.
Nope, the goose is first.
Is
it the Grand Marshal, the mayor, Santa Claus?
The mayor.
San Diego.
It's Santa Claus.
Oh.
Ho, ho, ho. Okay, which holiday celebration is held each year on the top of Mount Helix? You don't know?
Happy
is it
Helix
a,
Christmas.
Is it a choral concert, a Handel's Messiah, a holiday wine tasting festival, a community caroling party, or reindeer races?
Reindeer races.
That would be a lot of fun. But
it
no,
would be. I want to go.
Leona, do you ever guess?
Well, I would think in Mount Helix is probably tasting wine.
No. It's a caroling party.
Oh, caroling. That's good.
I live there. You walk up and go caroling all the way up the hill. Okay. Where can you find Scrooge every December in East County?
At my house.
At the bank.
At the bank. I don't know. I may be both. The answers were, the choices were, Grossmont College, Julian Town Hall, Lamplighter Theater in La Mesa, or Santee City Hall.
Lamplighter Theater?
Nope.
Santee City Hall.
Actually, it's the Julian Town Hall. They do a production of it every Christmas. Two more questions. Okay.
I'm not doing too well.
La Mesa's annual Christmas in the Village evokes a bygone era. Which one is it?
Era?
The 19th century.
19th century. Well, you're kind of close. Is it the Wild West, the Gold Rush days, the golden age of silent movies in the 1920s, or is it the Victorian era?
Victorian.
Raina is right. It's
Yay.
The Victorian era. Okay.
Oh, my.
Last one. One East County facility does something very unusual with pumpkins and turkeys every holiday season. How are they used?
They smash them?
Actually, San Diego State does do a pumpkin drop, but they don't drop turkeys. Thankfully for the turkeys.
Well, that's good.
They drop turkeys out of a
helicopter.
Nope, not that I know of. The choices are, do they use them for target practice at a shooting range?
Oh, my gosh.
Decorating and displaying at an art gallery, auctioning off for an East County charity, or feeding hungry lions at a big cat rescue facility.
Auctioning off.
No.
Feeding the big cats?
Yes, that's right.
Oh,
that's
my
the
gosh.
Right answer.
I picked the most unlikely.
Well, thanks to both of you for joining us for another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia. Thank you. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning author and East County native Peggy Lang. My guest writes, ghostwrites, and or edits most anything from web copy to general nonfiction to memoirs, novels, and screenplays. Welcome, Peggy. It's a pleasure talking with you.
It's great to be here.
Let's begin with your most recent book, Assassin's Game, which was co-authored with Governor Dan Walker, and it won Best Action Suspense Thriller at this year's San Diego Book Awards. What was that project like for you, and how did you come to collaborate with the governor?
We had collaborated on his memoirs earlier, The Maverick and the Machine. He was a rebellious governor in rebelling against the Chicago machine politics under the Daley administration. And so we did that book together, which also won an award. And then he came up with this fiction idea and asked me to critique it. And I said, well, here's what you should do. And he said, well, I don't want to do that. How about if you do it? So eventually we went back and forth and decided to collaborate on it.
And so did you enjoy that process? Was it different collaborating with a governor versus another writer?
It was different collaborating with a governor. I absolutely love Dan. He's a dear, dear friend. But he has this gubernatorial authority about him that I found it a little bit difficult to work around. Yeah.
But you worked through it.
We do. And we still have arguments, but oh well, we get through. And we understand that that's part of our process, so it's okay.
Great. Well, I know that you've ghost-authored and ghost-co-authored quite a few other books, including an award-winning memoir in 2007, and more recently a novel called Hearts on the Line. I've talked about this before in here, but what is your experience as a quote-unquote ghost, and is it something that has added to your writing and editing skills? I mean, what's ghosting like for you?
I love ghosting.
Really?
Yes, I do. As a writer, we are very isolated and spend enormous amounts of time alone, concentrating in front of a computer. And so one could easily just turn into a little hermit type of a person. And so for me, being a ghostwriter is a chance to collaborate with a number of different people. And I've gotten very, very close to the people I collaborate with. And it's enriched my life. It has stretched me as a writer enormously.
Really?
I feel like I can just about take on anything at this point because I've done so many different types of things. I find it very worthwhile. I am ready to get into my own stuff, though.
Sure.
I think I'm sort of veering in that direction a little bit.
Is it at all difficult to not have your name on the work that you've done, or is that just part of the...
You know, it was something I had to get over. On that memoir that I mentioned with the governor, we sold it to SIU Press, and I had it in my contract, Southern Illinois University Press, and I had it in my contract that I was going to have a byline on the cover. And the editor said, well, I can't sell this book with your name on it. Everybody will think you wrote it. And he said, listen, editors get shafted all the time. And I was more than an editor. I was truly a co-author. But
right.
Okie dokie then. I didn't want to, you know, I would never get in the way of a project. So I just decided I can do this. I can just be in the background and that's okay. You know, Colin Powell, said, it's amazing what you can get done as long as you don't have to take credit for everything. And so I thought,
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah. So and that's been true for me. I've gotten so many projects now that since I don't have to have my name on it.
Yeah. So there are so many riches that it compensates for the.
Absolutely. For me, it does.
Well, I know you're an active member of the writing community. You teach at UCSD, the La Jolla Writers Conference, and other places. What is it about teaching that draws you as opposed to the writing, ghostwriting? Would you call it just more stable work, or is it another labor of love?
It's a little bit of both. I rely on the classes at UCSD Extension to pay my property taxes, for example. But I love the process. Sometimes it leads to collaborations. Other times it leads to people that I bring into the writers' groups that I'm in. Teaching has also caused me to be very focused on what I'm trying to get across,
right,
which forces me to understand it better, and which enables me to use it better than when I'm writing. So it's kind of a win-win process.
So listening to you, I see it's all an interconnected web, really.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and I love being around writers. I don't know, there's something about people who write, and it's like a wanting to communicate with your fellow human being in a heightened kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I just find that exciting.
Great. So what's your most exciting project? And
a past exciting project was getting to work on this rock opera. I had never done anything like that. I had worked on screenplays, but never a rock opera. I was working with some very brilliant musicians, but they didn't quite have their story. Well, we worked on the script, and they didn't understand how to dramatize the things they were trying to get across from their music. And so we helped them with that. That was a very exciting and fun project.
So where is that rock opera? Is it being produced somewhere? Or
Produced it in another country, and then they were in a different language, actually.
Right. Well, then one last question, Peggy. What are you working on now with your name? And could you share a little bit about your routine or your writing process? I mean, what works best for you when you either have a deadline or give yourself a deadline?
I like deadlines, and I often have to give myself deadlines. That's a big part. But basically, I write every single day, almost. At least, and maybe not all day, but for some of the day. And so I have to get some exercise in, otherwise my brain atrophies. I'm excited right now. One of my writing partners, Marla Martinson, who did the Hearts on the Line, I did that with her as a ghost. We are now writing with my name on it on a partnership basis, a screenplay, which we just got a manager for, which is similar to an agent,
right,
who plans to market it as a pilot for a TV series.
Oh, how exciting.
And so I am excited about that. That feels fun. And I have another book with the governor on corruption, and then I have a book that I'm doing on leadership, which takes the standpoint that what if the soul is the most important element of leadership, and it's for the Hansen Foundation, who has brought in some 33 women peacemakers to San Diego, USD, the Joan Kroc Center for Peace and Justice. And so I'm mostly writing up their stories, but from this particular slant, because these are amazingly dedicated, beautiful spirited women, and it's really exciting and a pleasure to write about them.
It sounds like a good time for that.
Yeah.
In the world.
What the world needs now.
Yes. Well, Peggy, our time is up, but thank you again for
joining
us.
Thank you so much for having me, Raina. It's been a pleasure.
For more information on Peggy Lang, please visit her website at www.peggylang.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
To help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.